reaching into your community. The Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
In a few minutes, we're going to have the very latest in space and astronomy news, because this is the space show. And we're going to have quite a few things on the show tonight, a few little short stories, a bit of news, and our big feature will be Australia in space, current activities, and should Australia have a national space policy, and what should be in it. And joining us tonight will be a number of guests, so moderated by Peter Irwood, a member of the Space Association. You are listening to the Space Show on Southern FM, and we're going to hand over now to Peter Irwood for a very special discussion we're going to have on Australia in space and space policy. Over to you, Peter.
Well, welcome everybody to the Space Association's Space Show, and Andrew's for that that news bulletin. As Andrew might have indicated, we have a special discussion tonight. We're titling Australia and Space in 2013. And we've got some distinguished speakers for you to hear from. What we're going to try to do is to perhaps paint the picture of what the world of space, Australia's activities in space, has been, is, and may be into the future. So joining us today, we have David Rennicky, who is an astronomy lecturer and teacher. He's a feature writer for major Australian newspapers, magazines, and a science correspondent for the ABC, commercial radio, etc., etc. We also have Robert Brand, who's an active campaigner for the Australian Space Program. He's a lobbyist, he's a radio operator, he's got a love of deep space radio, he's a co-founder of the World Moon Bounce Day, and he's also director of spacecraft communications for Team Stellar, a space organisation doing business right here in Australia. Also on the line, we have Lachlan Thomas, who is the Associate Professor at RMIT University.
Lachlan Thompson.
Beg your pardon. And he's got some opinions and thoughts about how we might progress the whole concept of Australia and space. And then finally we have Len Halperin, who is a member of the Space Association. He's got a PhD in astrophysics from Monash University. He's the former president of the Monash University Astronautical Club, which is a forerunner of the Space Association. Len describes himself as a child of Apollo, who has an active space advocate background in the 70s, making several Australian media appearances along the way. But as he says, he grew up tired of being an activist as he saw repeated inquiries and reports into some form of Australian Space Agency surface every few years and then sink without a trace. So Len now describes himself as a retired space cadet who maintains an interest in all things space-related and has a network of contacts in the Australian space community. Although Len is not directly involved, Len is familiar and in close contact with some of the main players driving Australia's current space efforts and coordinating a national space policy for Australia. Very interesting, so this should be a great show. I'm not going to talk for too much long, but essentially what we'll do is we'll open the floor to each speaker for 5 minutes, and then we'll get into some general discussion. Len, would you like to open up?
Thanks, Peter, and thanks to all the other guys out there in Skype land. And this could be a very interesting night's conversation. I think it's an important one we need to have. Don't know how many listeners are out there.
Millions. I've been told millions.
Millions. That's fantastic. If any of you are out there, go on to Peter's Space Association page and click a like or let us know that you heard. Look, my background is I go way back to Apollo, you know, primary school during Mercury and secondary school during Gemini and tertiary education during Apollo, and I was there when it all happened, and the memory lingers. I'm a baby boomer, like I guess a lot of our demographic would be, and we all ache and long for the days of Apollo. And I was really enthusiastic back then, and I used to fight the good fight, and I would talk to whoever would listen. And over the years, which turned into decades, my interest and energy waned, because I saw nothing come from all my and many, many other good people's efforts. And so I thought, I'll just sit back and enjoy astronomy and space and do what I can do. And organisations like the Space Association are great. I keep my hand in it. It's all very good. But I've often wondered what would happen with an Australian space program. And I happened to be talking to a gentleman that I've known for a long time. I had a conversation back in 2009, a Mr. Brett Biddington, ex-Australian Air Force and influential in many Australian space and astronomy circles. And it was around about this time that the government had a Senate inquiry into space, and it's another one of these governmental inquiries, but this was the first time that I believe an inquiry had been called for by one of the Houses of Parliament. This was a Senate inquiry, and it ended up being called Lost in Space, and they delivered a formal report, and the government responded in 2009, and this was around the time I was having a conversation with Brett, and I said, yeah, Brett, I've heard it all before. What's going on? You know, it's going to rise again and it's going to fail like it has for the last 40 years. And he said, Len, this time's different. He said, wait and see. So I had the conversation with him again as recently as last week, and he said, yep, still true. 2009 was a tipping point, and we do actually have a space formalised government activity going on. It's just very low profile and it's not exciting to the public. So as I understand it, this is the state of play. Since 2009, a government department has been charged with basically running space in Australia. Now, for all the listeners out there, I've got to say I exclude astronomy. Astronomy in Australia has always done very well. That's the optical guys, that's the radio guys at parks. Australian astronomy has done amazingly well and punched way above its weight. So I'm talking about all other aspects of the space sector. We've just lacked coordination, and despite the efforts of many good people, it's never come together. But since 2009, that situation has changed, and amongst the many other things they did, apart from receiving government money to start setting up a policy unit and giving out money to Australian space research grants, they also set up a portal. And I would recommend all listeners to go and have a look at www.space.gov.au. That is the official front door to space in Australia. It's a work in progress. It's by far from perfect, but that's the starting point. That's your first point of call. Now, the problem is that myself and a lot of the good people over the years, we do come from the baby boomer demographic, and we begin from the position of saying all these other nations have got space programs, beginning with the really big guy who's got NASA. Why can't we have something like that? Why can't we have a beautiful shiny office somewhere with a big sticker on the front that says NASA or Australian NASA or something like that? Well, the reality is that Australia is different, and that's just not going to happen. In the world of about the 200-odd nation states, only about 10% of them are space-faring. The other 90%, of which Australia falls into, are space-utilising or space-dependent nations. And we've done very well by leveraging off other nations. We basically have GPS thanks to the American taxpayer. It's cost us nothing. There's just one very simple example. So I'd be interested to see where the conversation goes, and I really acknowledge the efforts of all the other speakers tonight, because I'm in spirit, I'm with you guys. I know it. I've been there, but there is a space program going. It's not the sexy, fantastic men in space, NASA-type space program, but it's a space program that is suited to Australia's needs.
So well, that's a good point to hand it. Thanks, Len. That was fascinating. David, would you like to pick up from there and give us your overview yourself and what you do? And
yeah, thanks, Len. Good to hear those points, Len. I really appreciate that. I must say, the more that I get involved with this group, and I thank you very much for inviting me along, by the way, the more I get involved with this group, the more excited I am, the more invigorated I am, because I was really heading down the path that there was nothing there. We weren't going anywhere. Look, Dave Renicky is my name, folks. I'm an astronomy teacher, lecturer. I write for several newspapers, magazine called Australasian Science Magazine. I'm also a science correspondent with ABC Commercial Radio. My contribution tonight won't be all that great, because my area of expertise is not in this particular sphere that you guys move in. I'm just somebody from the outside looking in with a great interest and a desire to see this happen too, just like everybody else does. My contribution is going to be, and I hope in the future become more involved with you, is to promote this, because that's what I do. I'm on radio every week to serve about 3 million people we talk to right across Australia on 13 stations. That's what I do. So, look, I'm really pleased to be part of this. I thank you very much for this radio station for doing that. And it's good to hear that the points that Len brought up there. And I'm really, really enthusiastic to know that we've got a national space policy in the throes of debate. This is badly needed. And, of course, Lachlan soon will tell you about, establishing hopefully a Southern Hemisphere space agency. Look, I've been in these debates before. I've seen this all talked about before, and I was becoming fairly jaundiced to it, but I'm invigorated now. I really think you guys are onto something here. If you can work together, join together, and put this into a cohesive little pile, you can really do something. I am so stunned every time I look at what we do here and what we don't do. We've always played caddy to the United States space program. We had a space program here at one stage. Now you go overseas and you mention Woomera to anybody out there, and hardly anyone knows that this is where we launched the Blue Streak rocket from. This is where we launched our own satellite from. We had a city here employing people. We were number 3 in the world, but we just dropped the ball and didn't run with it. And now I'm hearing this debate being put forward. A week ago, this didn't mean much to me, but it is now. I hope it's successful for everybody. I hope you keep me on board. I can't add much materially to what you do. I can only sit on the side and look at it and help you with it as much as I can by promoting it. Really, thank you for that. I hope this goes well. I can't add much more than that. If I do, I'm just going over all ground, but it is sad when you see what the government's doing. We're crying out for funds here. I don't know how everybody feels about this, but I'm not really confident the government's going to move in on this. I just think we dropped the ball too long ago for it to be picked up. And in what 40 years of doing what I do, giving talks, talking on the radio, you know, there's only about a handful of times that I can ever remember a question coming in from the general public about us having a space program here. Whether that's apathy, I don't know. Whether we've just, you know, years ago decided that we're not going to do it and that's the way it is, I don't know. I do know that there's time to do something. I think the time is now, and it's really great to be part of this, and I'm proud to be associated with you fellas. I hope in the future that I can add a little bit more to it. That's essentially where I stand. I will listen to everybody's point of view, all the debates coming on, and wish you all the best once again.
Thanks, David.
Over to you.
Thanks, David. I really appreciate that. And you're an important part of the equation because, you know, part of what we want to try and do is communicate what's going on and communicate what we think should happen. So thank you very much. Now we'll hand over to Robert Brand. Robert, welcome. You still there?
Yes, I'm here. Terrific. And good to be here. Somehow I think I kicked off this debate being a bit concerned about what I sort of thought of as apathy, but may very well be a bit of a dumbing down of the population in regards to space and our activities and our capabilities. I actually worked on Apollo 11 comms when I was 17 in my term break, and then I went on to work on every Apollo mission other than, was it 12? And right through the shuttle, support of the shuttle. I was at Parkes for ESA's Giotto probe to Halley's Comet, and the Voyager encounters with Neptune and Uranus. On and on it goes. But eventually I slipped out of working in the space area, but it was still only telecommunications support for all of this. And a couple of years ago, I moved heavily back into actually wanting to work full-time in space areas, and now I give the odd lecture at university. I've basically tagged for a project called Median, which is to land some probes on Mars in 2020 with the along with the next rover, and working as director of Team Stellar's spacecraft communications, navigation and data, which basically means building a lot of big dishes, working on how all the communications will work between spacecraft and back to Earth, building the network around the Earth and putting all the navigation systems into the spacecraft and into the our ability to communicate with them. And, you know, that's a paid role. I'm very happy to actually be pretty much working full-time as in aerospace, and that's growing. We're also launching balloons to high altitude, and so far we've recovered all 14 payloads that we've launched in the last 12 months. So a lot of activity going on there. And also we're building equipment. So my background is really quite entrepreneurial at the moment, and I've discovered that I'm better known in every other country except Australia, and even though I'm doing all of this work in Australia. So I'm called upon to go overseas and give talks at conferences and basically on TV in places like Croatia. But I discovered I couldn't get even 10 seconds on TV here in Australia or on the radio. It was a very hard push. And it's not because of anything with my background. It's basically it's not news. It's not interesting unless something is coming from NASA. Well, that's what I perceive, and I sort of put forward the idea that we've either been dumbed down by the government knocking back proposals all the time that were seeking to do work in space, and I sort of put forward a few ideas on how to actually get things going and get things moving and basically get space back on the agenda for TV and possibly even for the election coming up. So that's my aim at the moment, is to try and push for space to becoming much higher profile in the media.
Robert, it's Andrew Rennie here.
Yes.
I've often been of the view that if the Australian government and its agencies put together all the reports they had done and piled them up in a big stack, we'd be able to climb that stack and get into outer space.
We'll take that as a comment, as Tony Jones would say.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you, Robert. That was wonderful, brilliant. Now, our fourth speaker, Lachlan Thompson.
Thank you, Peter. And, gentlemen, it's a pleasure to join you and the listeners as well. My first exposure to space was at 5 years old, and my father picked me up, took me outside, pointed to the night sky, and here was this bright shining light whizzing across the sky. Didn't have a clue what it was. Later found out it was Sputnik. But there was a long time waiting before anything else seriously happened. And I was very fortunate to have an experiment on one of the space shuttles, STS-107 Columbia, and been able to collaborate in a few International Space Station experiments. And during that time, and now, I'm an associate professor at RMIT University. Why am I here? Well, at the National Space Conference last year, I did propose that perhaps we should be looking at forming a space consortia agency of other countries in the Southern Hemisphere. But that's not the real issue. We heard just a couple of days ago that our national debt is over $250 billion. How are we going to pay it? The mining boom is running dry. The mining tax has been wound back. Where is the money going to come? We can't put sheep on this country. We've run out of that. That's all gone. So where are we going? If you look at what Australia's done with medicine and invested in that, it's yielding returns with medical inventions, actually the intellectual property, the technology, earning money from all over the world. In other words, Australian medical science patented it and got it all over the world. And Australia, one of us, is benefiting not just in better medical service, but in the money coming back, a percentage of that, to the Australian government. I believe our mission is to convince the Australian government that it should invest in space, because space, to do space, it's hard. And you have to spend all your money on Earth to do it, and you have to invest in technology and how to do things. And this doesn't mean that we have to go and build a rocket or some whiz-bang spacecraft. Far from it. We need to partner with countries and companies that are doing this already and provide unique areas of expertise in developing the IP, but not as buying the service back and ideas. And that's where I believe the future is for Australia. And the problem is, what is the pathway and what changes do we need to do to facilitate private industry in Australia to make money for Australia and reduce this $250 billion debt, Peter?
Great, great question. Thank you, everybody. Well, okay, I'm going to start off with a statement or an idea. Okay, we already have a space office. It's part of the government, one of the government departments, the Innovation Department of Innovation, Education and Training, off from memory. It does have a funding or seed program that it does make grants available to organisations that can prove their case to say, we've got an idea that can take off, give us some money and we'll do it. Love some comments on the success or otherwise of that. Anyone who's had some experience, I think, Lachlan, you've had direct experience of that. But before we go there, there is a space policy as it stands right now.
Yes, for the grant scheme, it was quite successful. The problem was that the funding was only indicated for 3 years. And in order to go further, there's no pathway. And we end up with dead ends, and it actually funded a lot of projects where there was no network with sufficient international trading of IP. Yes, there were some international partners, but no thought to how Australia would actually capitalise on the intellectual property that could be developed. And so the return on it is probably not going to be particularly high at this point in time.
So is that a failure of the policy or the grant structure itself?
It's not a failure of government. It's not a failure of the scientists and us, the engineers, and us, the corporate business people, to get our message across to the government in a clear way that they can understand. They understand dollars, they understand votes. What they don't seem to understand is that in order to work in the space industry, it's highly formalised. People need a network to work through. They need a channel, a pathway. Now, in the United States, that's very easy. It's got this space agency. I don't think we need a big space agency. We don't even need a plaque on the wall. But we need this network pathway, and we can't do it alone. We need to be an international network, and we haven't got that international network at the moment because we're not part of the club.
So does that kind of network exist in other fields, for example, medicine? Is there some model that we could clone or mimic?
Yes, mimic medical industry. Absolutely. The network through the medical industry is absolutely phenomenal. This international body of surgeons that provides a pathway for research funding all over the world, and that then leads to a funding model where you get corporate funding from the drug companies, from the robotics companies, from government, can all go through that network so that you end up with a international funding model. In space, we don't have that. And to solve that problem in Europe, the European Space Agency was formed, and that is a network within Europe. But it's an exclusive club, and Australia's not a member. And it's probably not an option for us to try to join anymore.
Hence your concept of a Southern Hemisphere.
Well, we need to...
Or consortium.
Find another pathway. For the United States, there's very little benefit for Australia to become an equal partner or a partner where we retain certain IP and network. And that's only one country. Yes, it's a wonderful partner, but it's only one country. What we need to do is find a way that we can actually have trading alliances with companies that are hungry to develop their space technology. Brazil is one. They are cashed up. They are spending over $650 billion a year to go and do it. South Africa hasn't got money and wants to do it. Hence, they won the Square Kilometre Array project from ESA. Australia, South Africa and Brazil would be possibilities. It could actually work. One of the problems that Brazil has is it's got money and it hasn't got enough trained people. That is a big plus. That means that Australian expertise may be able to work with them. But there's no space pathway in Australia, the Australian Space Office is not recognised internationally as a pathway by all these other space agencies and government bodies.
Okay, Lachlan, thanks. That's a good point to break out.
Len here. Len. I'd just like to say a couple of things about that. I think if any criticism can be levelled at the government's efforts, and I think you can, is that they haven't made themselves visible enough for whatever reason. And just to go back to the grants program, the government response in 2009 instantly produced $46 million, which is not a lot of money. And was partitioned as $40 million to the grants and $6 million put aside for the Space Policy Unit, which at the time was undermanned and under-resourced. Now, the money, the $40 million for the grants, was for 3 years and it runs out this year, or it ran out last year, but it's running out round about now. And what wasn't foreseen back at the time of the government response was the GFC and the effect that that would have, and that's just really smitten everything across government, as we know. So that was the first thing. I mean, it was well-intentioned in the sense that they thought if something would get up in the 3 years, then the program would roll over and they'd get more money. And, of course, there was a change at the top of the government as well, and that was unforeseen, and that filtered down onto the space effort as well. Now, the second issue, I think, is a bigger and wider one. I think the takeaway here is that maybe all of us need to reframe the way that we've basically grown up in the space age thinking about what Australia has or hasn't done in space, and accept, rightly or wrongly, that something is happening now. Very few people seem to be aware of it, and the classic example is most of us here tonight, but it's there, it's real, and like it or not, as small and ineffective as it is, it's the main game, and it's not going to go away. And what we should do, if we're going to stick our oars in the water, we should all stroke in the same direction. So to say that we don't have a space program is actually demonstrably not true. We actually do have a space program, and because we are a space user, we actually do leverage heavily off other nations already. In the Earth observation satellite area, we use about 22 EOS satellites. A program looking into the utility and life of those is that 19 of them are going to die by 2015. So we instantly are facing an EOS crisis by 2015. And that's something that the government needs to address straight away, and they're fully aware of that. Another thing is that the same said government department, which I think has rebranded itself since 2009, but back then it was called Department of Innovation, Industry, Science and Research, they commissioned a report from the American company Futron to assess Australia's use of space products and services and do a comparative benchmarking analysis. And we scored either second or third out of all the comparable ranged countries in the world on a variety of parameters. Exhibit 2, National Space Usage Benchmarking. I'm looking at the report here in front of me. You can download it from Futron.com. Aggregated Results Index to Australia. We came second. National Space Usage Benchmarking Aggregated Results. Effectiveness by country. Australia came second. And I'm just looking through this. There are a bunch of graphs here where we've either come second or first, or in some cases third. And that's a normalised scale relative across all the comparable nations. So that's an American independent report, not connected to anyone in Australia.
So does that mean that's talking about the usage of space technology information, or is that how much we spend? Or some other parameter?
How we utilise the space resources we have. Like, we're very good in national disaster management using space, whatever space brings to that picture, but we could be doing it better. And the report comments at the end that we're not optimising our use of space for national disaster management. But I get back to my main argument, and it's about reframing the debate. And we've got to start thinking along the lines and know what's off the table. What's off the table is Australia will not invest in manned space flight, will not invest in launch, and will not have a space agency. That's not on the immediate horizon. So if we can frame ourselves around that and accept the way the state of play is today, we can move forward.
Fair enough. Robert, would you like to say a few words and your thoughts on what we've covered so far? We've only really scratched the surface. Yeah.
Well, I sort of look at us as being a renter of space services and technologies. We buy satellites that someone else has put up. We do all of this sort of stuff. And, we spend a lot of money. We could be making more, I believe. The current direction for space in Australia is one that's logical. We're going to pick the low-hanging fruit, the ones that we can best address and easily address. My concern in general is that we also don't support things that fall outside that area. We may have a focus on these important low-hanging fruits, on the low branches, but we shouldn't forget that there are bigger opportunities that may come our way, and we're not leaving ourselves open to address those. It's fairly important that we keep the doors open for some fairly big things that could come our way, and I think that's what's being forgotten here.
Hmm. David, if you don't... Oh, sorry, Robert, I didn't mean to cut you off. David, we've had a comment come in on Facebook from Chris Andrews. Why, it's a general question, why has our government not given space exploration the attention it deserves?
Well, I think Robert succinctly put it together when he said that we've been playing second fiddle far too long, and I think that's mm-hmm. the case. You know, I can go back as far as anyone can. I remember sitting in front of TV Seven as a young kid watching them walk on the moon. You know, even before that, I used to sit in front of the radio like Robert probably did, and you guys too. We used to listen to the countdowns. We watched Shepard launch. We watched Cooper launch, and we heard it all. We became part of that. I became enthusiastic about it, and I always have been. But I think the general psyche of the Australian public is that, ho-hum, so what? We don't need it. We've never had it. It's not going to make a squirt of difference to my life. We are not used to it. We had it at one stage. We were a pretty important part of the space program. And look, I'm not decrying the fact that we gave that away. We've always been a very important backbone to the United States and the American space program. But you know yourself, we've got the images here, Parks. I mean, they couldn't have done it without us. But I think for far too long now, the Australian public has been educated, unintentionally educated, and just come to accept the fact that we haven't got a space program. We probably never will have a space program. What problems have caused in the past? Why should I worry about it now? But I've got to go back and finalise my little talk here by saying that this is an outside view for me. I'm not an insider. I don't have the advantage that you guys have of being part of the infrastructure. I don't have any insight whatsoever. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I didn't know much of this existed. You've opened my eyes up to it, and I really thank you for allowing me to become part of this discussion. My area, as I said to you, is in promotion, in media. I can certainly push the cart for you. You're going to have to fill it up for me a little bit.
Sure.
But I must say that I am totally, totally knocked out by the quality of the experience I've heard, the enthusiasm I've heard here, and the outlook we've all got. I think we're all positive about it.
Sure.
Not one word of negativity has come into this discussion whatsoever.
We haven't finished the show yet.
We've got the making of a good committee.
Thanks. One thing that probably people may be aware of, I think it was mentioned in the intro, is that Australia does have a space policy in development, which is planned to be released. Well, it was planned to be released late last year.
Imminently.
Imminently. Some people think it might be introduced at the Australian Astronomical Conference in a couple of weeks. But we've heard an inside tip that, and this might be going back to perhaps, is there a cultural cringe for Australia relating to space to the point where it's believed that the policy won't be called Australian Space Policy, it'll be called the Space Utilisation Policy. Well, anyone want to make a comment on that?
Yeah, I'd like to chirp in on that. And the story there is that whenever somebody over the long history of attempting has gone to the government with a space policy, calling it a space policy or a space program or a space whatever, it is not taken very seriously. It's usually thrown to a minor ministry that's a junior yes. minister. Space is usually... The space that we do, if I can say that, is mainly in the realms of national defence and security. They're the big consumers of space. And defence is a senior minister as opposed to a junior minister. So the other guys usually get, for want of a better word, laughed out of the room.
And by its very nature, most of it is unknown or secret.
Is that right in saying that? So this time around, very cleverly evading that. So this time around, to rebadge the whole situation, if you take out space and you throw in words like satellite and industry and utilisation, it's instantly amenable to the people that you need to sell it to. So, yes, it's a space policy, but it's been deliberately packaged so as not to be thrown out at the first glance. Now, if there's one thing to take away from this conversation tonight, is that it's a false premise that we're doing nothing in space. We do have a space program, call it what you like, but Australia does have a space program. The real conversation is about national policy, and items such as security, innovation, environment, they're all important to Australia. So that's where we're at. It's real, it exists, it's small. You can criticise them for lack of publicity, but it's there and it's not going away.
Very good, good point. Can I make one, just ask one question?
Please, David.
To the group as a total group. Can somebody tell me why we failed so many times in the past to try and initiate a space program here in Australia? I can go back and look at two or three that I know of personally that I talked about on radio and wrote about, i.e. Cape York. Can somebody tell me why we never, ever got this off the ground before?
Cape York was just, well, it ran into environmental problems, of course, because you want to stick something up there. But there's infrastructure problems, there's transport problems. As well as Cape York, does anyone remember Christmas Island? And we had the Russians lined up with that. And then the market disappeared, and then the investors disappeared. So
Woomera was going to go ahead too, wasn't it?
Well, Woomera's not entirely shut down. And if you go there today, there's stuff happening, and we'll leave it at that. We can't get into the infrastructure game. That's not realistic. But what we do is things like WGS, which is a wideband communication satellite, a surveillance satellite, sorry, and all we did for that, it's a constellation of six. We bought one of them. We handed a check to the Americans. We get full access to that constellation. Not involved in building the satellite, not involved in launching it, not involved in maintaining it, but we get the data. And there are factors like that. We get real leveraged bang for buck without having to build a whole lot of stuff. You know, I eat Vegemite, quintessentially Australian, but it's not. It's owned by an American company now, multinational. I still eat Vegemite. You know, don't care where it comes from.
But we still don't have that identity. On a world scale, we do not have that identity. I think, besides there's only us and Britain, isn't there? There are only two major developed countries in the world that don't have an active space program.
But we yes, I would agree with that. This is Lachlan speaking. One of the problems is, and Len's very eloquently described it, we are doing a lot in space and defence is very active in it, but the words are, your own words, Len, defence is a consumer of space facilities. Even the satellite that we have bought off the Americans, and that's so that we can use it. Australia is a user. That's why it's going to be called the Space Utilisation Policy, as a user. Now, that's
why is that a problem?
Can't change that.
Why is that a problem?
No, it's not. Hang on, wait. Let me finish. Yes. It's fine. We will all be a user of space, and we should be. What, however, is happening is that this is being used and promoted as a mask of providing a major benefit to Australia. It's like having children going out and buying video games all the time. All the money goes out, the games come in. It's a never-ending out of money. We need to also, in parallel, perhaps in a much smaller capacity, encourage and provide pathways for inventors, for people with communication systems, for people with robotics, for people with, medical areas in space, but and materials. Pick some niche areas, foster them, let industry have the pathway, give industry the pathway, and it will find ways of developing those innovative little products that will actually be used on other people's spacecraft, other people's system, but they'll flow on to internet communication, high-speed video, telemedicine, in new materials that you can actually make a new heart valve and actually put it in there with no rejection, and it'll last 100 years. They are the things that Australians should be inventing and be part of, and there is no mechanism that allows that.
Yeah, Robert here. I'd like to also mention I do a lot of work with the universities here in Sydney, and basically all the people that I'm mentoring or trying to get on as interns, basically have to go overseas to do their internship, and then they have to go overseas to get jobs. And not very many of them return. We seem to be doing a lot of stuff in training the world's people, and then we lose all of that in a big brain drain following their university careers. Some of them actually came back to work in the Space Policy Unit, but when that closes, I guess they're overseas again. I find that we are very good at doing a lot of things, but we don't really look at the consequences and what we lose, and the fact that we could be doing much more. Certainly, I'm also concerned about going to the space.gov.au and looking up the what kids can do and look at, and every single one of them is pretty much go to an overseas website like NASA and see this or see that. But the only thing they could think to do in Australia for space for kids was a bit of geocaching and running around the neighbourhood looking at things with GPS. And that disappoints me greatly that we don't even have a good program for children to get involved in. At least we don't have a good one that we can display publicly in our space.gov.au page. I know people like VSEC and a whole range of other people are doing great things, but again, it seems to be lacking coordination through the government, and that irks me somewhat.
Sure. We're getting close to towards the end of the show, so we probably should perhaps swing around the room, if you will, and maybe get some suggestions from each of you on what should be the next step. What should we do? I mean, there's a federal election coming up later in the year. Can we make it, or could we make it a political issue? Are we doing enough to actually tell the good stuff, the good story that we already are doing? You know, there is business out there actively doing space for profit. We are a big spender on space, but most of the time we spend it as a customer. And I think Lachlan's point is we should try to turn ourselves around to be more of a supplier. I don't know, tell me, can we get Tony Abbott to stand up and slam his fist on the table saying we need a Southern Hemisphere Space Agency? I don't know.
Are these our concluding wrap-ups, Andrew?
Well, it's Peter.
Oh, sorry, Peter.
Well, yeah. We've got 5 minutes to go, so we probably should start it because you know what these wrap-ups can do.
They can get carried away.
Off on a tangent.
Len here. Just a quick correction. The vagaries of live radio. I said consumer of space for defence. I should have said a player, so forgive me for that. They consume and do other things. What we need to do, and you've got an election coming up, you're correct, is we need to create a space narrative, and it needs to be the correct narrative. We accept that the process is political and competitive. We have to use solid evidence and not just make assertions. We have to understand both business and government objectives, and we have to avoid any exaggeration and limit the space gee whiz, for want of a better word, giggle factor. We need to know what's off the table, and we need to know what's on the table. And if we pull in the same direction and explore what the government is doing, then maybe we can raise the profile of the currently existing space program and be very clear. Australia has a space program. If you get nothing else out of this, that's my message. So, yes, niche technologies in a global market, great. We've always been good at astronomy. We just do very well at that, but that's not part of this problem. The real big things for space are space situational awareness. We can get involved in helping with the debris problem. There are lots of things we can do. So if there's any criticism at all, the whole game has been very low profile, and maybe because they don't have the resources to raise the profile, or maybe because it's just plain not sexy. And it's not driven by profit, it's driven by national policy needs. So just to focus on dollars and profit alone, while they are important, is not the whole story. So I think that's it. That's about it. Peter?
Thanks, Len. Who else would like to jump in?
Yeah, Dave Reneke here. David? I'll only take 10 or 15 seconds here. I just want to say I like the ideas. I think they'll work. I think you guys have got the the focal point of a pretty good you've got the thrust. It's moving in the right direction. But I really think you need to form a lobby group now, don't you? And that lobby group needs to be headed by people with the experience in government and people who know how to get these things through to government. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a lobby group formed and maybe a change of name or a new name for that lobby group. What does everyone think of that?
Well, I do know there's an organisation in New Zealand which is formed called the Kiwi Space Foundation. Yeah. Whether that's a model we could look at, whether we could form a Trans-Tasman group, maybe that's a possibility.
Gee, they're spending $150 million this year refurbishing Parliament House. They're giving $300 million to the Cook Island gender equality there, and we've only got $1 million for Queensland flood victims. You know, I mean, get in there. Let's get some of this done. We need it. Mm. We need to get this funding. We need to get this up and running. I think out of all we've seen, all we've heard here, and all of my experience looking at this and watching it over the years, this is the best chance we've got to get this up and running. I think you guys are going to succeed.
Absolutely.
And I'm here to help you.
Yeah, Robert here. I'm just a little concerned about hearing what is on and off the table. If I'm doing something that's off the table, I think that it should be something that's still heard about by the general public and expanding their concepts and ideas of space, because that'll change policy in the future. I think that we really do need to get an education out there to the general public, and the space narrative should not be the same as the space policy unit as far, or unit's outcomes or needs or space, you know, the government at all.
Thanks, Rob.
I'm very much someone who believes that we are doing more in space than a policy will actually be able to absorb.
Robert, so I'm just going to jump in here. We've got 1 minute left. Lachlan, could you give us a 30-second and I'll... Sorry, mate.
Right. We'll always be a space user, and I encourage the government for recognising that, putting the money in. Let's space innovation through Australia start chipping away at that $250 billion, and government can create a pathway with other space agencies, and that's what I'd encourage them to do.
Fantastic.